Okay, next talk is Michael Stone, who's going to talk to us of OLPC security. Take it away, Michael.
Sure. So first of all, I apologize in advance for any disorganization in this talk. My fundamental purpose to try to discover our confusion about what BitTrust to do or says that we ought to do, about what we've done in each of the builds we've deployed, and about where we hope to go in the future. To begin with, I wish to a fable about three little pigs and a big bed. So once upon a time, there was a little pig named G1 who built a house of straw at Ticket Time Bomb Lane. And a wolf came along who said, we messed up with all of these machines. So he deployed an app that runs SU and takes over your machine and A segment of Peru built a house of sticks at 703 Carity Street in the theater district. And this little pig was protected from Romans, which had no care nor malice. But Wolf still came along and or at least blew down 703. And finally, and there was one little pig named Asgard, who built a fine meat hall and one over the rainbow, and were hidden from when the children of Daffod went to harrying.
As soon as we get well, we draw.
All right. This is sort of the overall thing we find ourselves is that we've deployed one build and our second build and have made incremental progress too, but are still not offering something worthy of the name, or really worthy of the state of security. It's very expensive to build. So in 656, there's simply no at all. Any software which is running on them can exercise the full authority of the user at any time that software chooses to do so.
I mean, I think that we have had one notable...
You're correct. Another emphasis, speaking firmly about the trust intent to grant the user discretionary control over how the software is the authority vested in the user, or to take software from the user's authority. Scott is entirely correct that some of the firmware level first boot activation that need to be in order to control the delivery chain described in BitFrost appeared to have ended to date, and we continue to do so. So in the state of isolation, 56 has zero, and 703 is somewhat better because it allows us to isolate the non-software from the file system, though new spoofing bugs unveiled by which have not yet been fixed, a little protection against malicious software. Furthermore, 703 contains a number of level services, including Sugar, the data store, telepathy, dbus, all of which, if it could, would grant access to root and to the full authority of the router. Does anyone have immediate questions of security? What isolation properties are provided if we've released to date?
I think maybe you should talk briefly about user security protections. That not like all the activities are running as root, but in, perhaps you could talk about the ways that enter our current state.
So, to date, the most commonly deployed isolation method on Unix systems has consisted of dividing authority into user accounts. Account typically in one-to-one correspondence with human operators for desktop software, though not for server-based software. These account and authority as the to human accounts is gated typically with a shared secret password, or with a combination with a shared secret which consists of part the username and the private. We find ourselves in a position of dealing with users who are literate. And so it was felt early on in the BitFrost specification phase that we could not make security depend on remembering a shared secret in the form of text. So far as I can tell, little given to the question of whether some other shared could be used to update or to divide authority into separate gated areas. So that might be a good question for reflection on the mailing list. But thus far, I decided to choose a system where we would attempt to use trusted UI nodes to measure the intent of the user, of the human operator operating the system, divide authority into small chunks, using existing Unix mechanisms.
Okay.
How we came to that decision in a minute. And then let these individual domains communicate with one another in possibly more restricted ways as time passes. There was an early implementation spike, you could think of it, that's built and executed by the summer interns, including myself, in sort of 2007, by me, Noah Cantrowood, and Michael Burns, with lots of advice and assistance from people like Ivan Christian and Herbert Pretzel and others. And this was based on a containerization technology for Linux called vServer, and it divided up authority into domains identified by vServer security IDs, used the chroot fidelity in a patch that vServer provided that hardened chroots to isolate the file system by preventing them from seeing files that we didn't want them to see in the first place, and used read-only bind mounts to restrict the ability of running the software run under this to modify the file system. Fortunately, the software that we developed had severe backwards compatibility problems and was extremely difficult to debug failures in the regime. Some of the reasons why it occurred were, first, it appears to me to be difficult for software authors to reason about the environment their program is going to be running if it's hard for them to directly observe that. A second thing that it can be hard to reason about is if there are non-local rules governing the sort of global state governing the ability of their software to perform I/O, as it is in other systems that we've considered, like SE Linux, where in order to answer the question, can my software do X, I have to know about the state of the global system, but I'm merely considering the state of X and a small finite set of rules that are all over the same everywhere for computing that access decision. So the vServer system was troubled by these usability failures, more or less, from the standpoint of others. And it was also troubled by several implementation impedance mismatches between the Vir code base and the existing JFFS2 file system. It led to level unreliability, the immaturity of the combination of the two. After thinking hard about the problem, I eventually came to the conclusion that all of the protections described in Bitfrost could be implemented with a system derived from standard Unix access control theories, specifically from those employed by privilege-separated data system services such as mail servers, particularly in the style of those written by Daniel Bernstein. So after spending a little bit of reading through that software, what I basically realized was that people who write reliable system servers for a living frequently separate, they compartmentalize their software so that failing one component reduce in effect. They result in denial of service to the system, but they don't reduce overall system viability to the same degree that failures in an uncompartmentalized are capable of doing. And this was the route that I chose to push us down, was to say that we, in order to improve the reliability of our system, we should compartmentalize our software so that failures in a single activity are less able to impair overall system reliability, and so that failures in a single component, like a networking component, again, unable to result in the disk being wiped. I think that's the most common. The vServer system did not lead to this increase in reliability, both for the immaturity reason I described and for the usability, so we looked for an alternate path. This is the one we came up with. So we might ask, how are we doing in this goal, achieving improved reliability by compartmental software into separate privileged domains demarcated by Unix UID.
No remote exploits.
In the first negative ever. 2 months.
And the answer is that we're very lucky so far because no one has tried to break our software. It's probably still easily breakable. And the reason is that there are some existing legacy applications, most notably X, that simply pay no attention to the authority boundaries demarcated by Unix UIDs. And X is, in my opinion, the greatest challenge facing us from the standpoint of software-supported reliability in the face of
it certainly gets nice when I try to unreliable use the components. Wrong UID.
Yeah, but then when you give that UID access to any part of X estate,
right, there's no
from all of X estate. Yeah.
So some of the things that are hard about X is that X is designed with a security model based on distinguishing between local and remote connections. And as soon as a connection is granted access to the X server, it's capable of doing anything it pleases. In particular, it can perform I/O in the form of setting properties on any window in the system, not just windows that it created or was actually granted authority over. This is used to implement important features like cut and paste and drag and drop, which are both central to our UI. And frankly, I'm not enough of an X expert to have any serious idea of what we are capable of doing to improve the security system. At present, it seems to me that we will never be able to promise true reliability of our system in the face of arbitrary activity code being run, because that activity code will be able to disrupt the UI until we find some way to fix that. So that's sort of number one technical isolation property. However, as I've mentioned, it's very expensive to pursue because there's an extreme quantity of legacy software that depends on the exact semantics that are present today, and because there's a very short supply of people who are expert enough in the system to improve it.
But the flip side of that is that any attacking program can take over the UI, can completely spoof
right.
any system message to the user and try to convince them to encrypt.
Precisely. So
capture all their key presses.
The situation that we find ourselves in is that we have a very valuable and very hard nut to crack, which is, what do we do about X? And to date, there have been three proposals, none of which appear on the surface portable. The first one is to use an existing or in-development X security access layer called the access control extensions, which give very fine-grained control over inside the X server over whether it will perform operations that it's been requested to perform by sending it X protocol messages. It's possible that the system can be used as a basis for an OLPC X security policy, but we don't have anyone doing that work at the moment, and we also presently don't have anyone qualified to do that work. There's some hope that we could hire one of the people behind XA, and if so, Eamon Walsh. I think that's who Jim suggested. And if so, maybe we'd make progress there, but that seems difficult to rely on. So the second way that people have approached... the second way that people have approached X security works on top of XACE, which is the XACE Flask module. This is what Chris was referring to a second ago, which is a specific policy for X that delegates access control decisions to the SE Linux framework and allows one to sort of strength reduce the problem of controlling X to the problem of writing appropriate SE Linux policy for the system. This is not intensely attractive to me for two reasons. And I think because while the strength reduction reduces the problem of writing of control X to writing good SE Linux policy, it also reduces the problem of controlling X to writing good SE Linux policy. And the challenge here, as I said, is that it's been difficult in my experience for our users to debug the system, even given the large install base of people who understand how Unix credentials work, the body of people who understand how SE Linux access control decisions are made is orders of magnitude smaller. The documentation for explaining that is sparse at best. And while the individuals who have designed framework are very friendly in my experience and have made themselves available to me, I don't feel that I am able to put forward SE Linux as a viable solution for OLPC's users today. That's the state. So that's the basic state of X. The other interesting security question that we have not seriously tried to address, which is causing a lot of pain for us at the moment, is the lack of identity service, or of, in fact, any communications security infrastructure whatsoever. There are a variety of intriguing problems here, because as with X, the underlying primitives on which communications take place on Unix systems were not designed with any notion of access control when they were built. The BSD sockets layer used the file abstraction provided by Unix to the extent that it gives us a readable and writable file descriptor as a result of constructing the socket, but there's no discretionary or mandatory access control, for that matter, on the operation of creating a socket or of reading to and writing from one. And so we're, again, starting from scratch here, more or less, in trying to come up with some system for letting the user's authority to open communications channels to other pieces of software, to other users, and for deploying their identity or choosing pseudonymity or anonymity. That authority is not broken up in any way along any known security boundary. It seems reasonable and plausible to me to say that this authority should be broken up along the Unix UID security boundary, or if we were using SE Linux, along the SE Linux labeling boundary. But that work is also in its infancy. So that's pretty much where things stand from the isolation perspective as of today. There are two open, significant challenges that we could begin to address. We can't claim to provide the degree of isolation required to make mobile code sharing safe until we have addressed those two mechanisms. We can do, you know, the things that we're doing are worthwhile, and I'm happy that we're doing them, but we really can't promise it is safe for you to run arbitrary software until we've addressed these things. And that's where things stand. I have some specific thoughts on the communication security that I'd like to impart if time remains, but I do want to make some time for questions at this juncture.
And I want to restate sort of that our success story side is that, you know, all the insecurities are have to be directly triggered by the user. And, you know, for a computer system, this still is a big, big step. There are no, as far as we know, there are no remote exploits on the machine, and there's nothing that can be triggered remotely to make stuff bad.
I think that's overstating, because I don't think anyone has looked for remotely exploitable vulnerabilities, particularly in the networking stack.
Okay, what I'm saying is we know that there are issues on the activity isolation side that we need to correct, but there are no fundamental issues with remote exploits. Any remote exploits there are probably inherent in Linux systems, not specifically.
We haven't done any security work within that.
Well, but there's the whole telepathy layer.
So look, the state of this was the state of security, right? And so what I'm trying to sort of say is, you know, it's not like we're going backwards from the standard Linux, right? It's true that we haven't made much forward progress beyond standard Linux, but as far as we know, we haven't regressed much either.
We've done some interesting infrastructure work in preparation for a final goal which will never be achieved, but which we will converge on as we, you know, that we will get closer and closer to. There are significant unknowns in our knowledge, such as the actual state of uncompartmentalized portions of our software, including dbus, telepathy, sugar, and the data store, and that the lowest hanging fruit available for improved isolation is to compartmentalize those pieces of software. That gains us a little bit of confidence that we'll turn overall breakage into denial of service. And in order to make progress towards our final goal of fast and easy, you know, mobile code, we've got a lot of hard problems left to solve.